Temples of Delight, written by Barbara Trepido and read by Tamsin Kennard.
Part 1. Miss Delight and the Queen of the Night. Chapter 1. Jem was a joyful mystery to Alice. She was something to give thanks for. She had first appeared in the classroom, not at the beginning of term like a normal person, but mid-term on a Wednesday. She had appeared like a dropped acorn, halfway through the term, halfway through the week, halfway through the silent reading hour. Suddenly, there she was in the doorway, almost as tall as the doorway itself. She was wearing an old blazer, which screamed its origins from the under-a-pound rail of the outgrown uniform sale, and on her feet she wore a pair of down-at-heel, grossly unpolished black pumps. She was carrying her things in a sort of boat-shaped canvas tool bag of considerable size.
"I'm Jem McCrail," she said to Miss Aldridge, in a poised, clear voice, which Miss Aldridge took as an affront. "Miss Trotter sent me."
"Ah, yes," said Miss Aldridge. "The new girl, but I have you registered here as Veronica Bernadette McCrail."
Jem appeared to ride this hitch with equanimity.
"I'm Jem," she said.
Miss Aldridge looked at her from top to toe and lingered pointedly upon the unpolished pumps.
"I have no objection to certain legitimate abbreviations of girls' Christian names," she said. "But I fail to see how Veronica Bernadette can possibly shorten to Jem."
"I'm Jem after the Jem sandwiches in P.G. Woodhouse," Jem said.
"I beg your pardon," Miss Aldridge said.
"You'll find it's in the Lord Emsworth stories," Jem said helpfully. "His lordship meets an urchin girl in the cowshed. You're probably familiar with the story."
"Perhaps you had better sit down, Veronica Bernadette," Miss Aldridge said, with strong intent to undermine, but she had already determined in this case to start as she meant to go on. "Alice Pilling will take care of you, since her better half is still absenting herself."
Alice reflected on Miss Aldridge's idiom for a moment. She had never thought of herself and Flora as two halves of something before, certainly not better and worse. And right then, she really had every reason to avoid thinking about Flora. To think of her was too dreadful. It made her shudder. The new girl came and sat down in Flora's place.
"During this hour, we read in complete silence," Miss Aldridge said, and she bore down upon the new girl with one of the books deemed sufficiently improving for the silent reading hour.
Alice observed that Jem had been handed the biography of Oliver Cromwell. She herself had had it until the previous week.
"Complete silence," Miss Aldridge repeated. "Is that correct, Form 3?
A half dozen funereal voices concurred without enthusiasm. The school was not one which attracted bookish girls on the whole, and there was no one in their third form who appeared positively athirst for a greater understanding of the English Revolution, except perhaps Flora, who was absent. Alice's schoolfellows generally contented themselves with winning all the inter-school hockey matches. Most of them left, after taking a gentle course or two in history of art or scripture, and went off to mark time in one or other of the preppier secretarial colleges around London. One or two of them made it to cram colleges in Oxford or Cambridge, where the champagne and 8 week experience was available to them without any of the undergraduates' hard grind. Claire Crouchley's older sister was currently attending a finishing school where she was learning how to emerge gracefully from a Rolls-Royce in a hat. The fees paid by the girls' parents at Alice's school were a little higher than those at the local Catholic school or at the nearby day school trust. But Alice's school boasted not only a boarding establishment and a neo-Georgian clock tower, but an oak-panelled dining hall with refectory tables and a solid air of tradition which had been invented in the 1930s.